We're talking now with Mark Souter. He is our District 1 Legislative House Seat A representative. And Mark, you've been there for two terms. I think you were first elected in 2022, if I got that my numbers right.
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for taking time to speak with us. And let's start out assuming that maybe not everybody knows who you are, even though you've been our representative for two terms. Tell us a bit about yourself, your background, your story.
I retired from the fire service in 2011, but my roots to Bonner County actually go way back to the 60s. With my parents, I came up camping at Priest Lake in 1969. Never really forgot about it. Back in the
You must have been about three.
I was young. I think I was 10 or 11. Well, I was 11.
Hello. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, and then in the early 90s, I had the opportunity. I was looking for, you know, some other place for recreation stuff. So I came up and toured, and I actually spent a couple summers looking at property up here. Thought, you know, this is a nice place, and I fell in love with kind of the whole community. We have a working community, especially then, between ag and timber and just a good working place. So I ended up, my second summer, bought some property out in Sagal. I still have it, 45 acres of trees. And so I've been a taxpayer here since 1993, have a, you know, timber exemption and all that kind of stuff. I've managed my woods. And then just over the years, felt like after I've retired, I was already vested in the retirement system where I was, that I'd like to come up. So I moved up here as soon as I retired, finished in 2011, and in spring of 2012, I had bought a house and was moving up here. And I've lived here since 2012, got involved with fire service up here. So I spent 30 years in the fire service, in a career job from firefighter to fire chief. Lots of volunteering with service agencies and all that, or organizations, and then came up here, got involved, and was a volunteer firefighter for a while, then even helped with some administrative work for about 10 years up here. I was even the president of the fire chiefs group up here for a few years.
For the Southside District?
For the Bonner County Fire Chiefs Association. So helped with that, so that got me a good working knowledge of how our local government stuff works and how our fire districts work and EMS. So got my foot in the door for all of that. Being a elected representative was never on my bucket list. A few people called me when there was an open seat, 4 years ago, and said, "Hey, you can do this. You'd be a good representative. You can represent our whole district." And so I researched it a little bit and ran, and surprise, I'm here after 4 years.
So the question I ask all the candidates, in your case, it's why are you running for re-election?
There's unfinished business. I'm really concerned about our rural healthcare situation between our two rural hospitals up here. There's a Rural Health Transformation Act that came to pass with the Big Beautiful Bill, and which is President Trump's bill that passed last July, and there's a lot of money that the state has has been appropriated to the state, about $1 billion over 5 years, and I'd like to see that project help our system sustainably, not just a shot in the arm and then let it go away. But, we have issues with our facilities. We have issues with, staffing. We have just lots of different healthcare issues here, transportation. Somehow we need to work on that. I ran an EMS agency in my career job for 10 years, and we had a pretty successful program. But you have to look at healthcare holistically, especially on the emergency side. How much care can we give here in Bonner County and Boundary, and how much care needs to go down the road to Kootenai, for instance, or some of it maybe go to Spokane. But transporting all of our hospital patients that need care to Kootenai every time, that's hours and hours of transport time.
Should we lose our local hospitals?
Yeah, and that's just a load on our, and also on our public. Mm-hmm. I mean, we right now we have a lot of our OBGYN care goes to Kootenai. Mm-hmm. And we lost three OBGYNs and a maternal fetal specialist a few years ago. That's for regular, you know, predictable women's health care. Mm-hmm. And that's tough on our community. And that also means every one of our women, or quite a few, need to go down that road an hour to 2 hours one way mm-hmm. year round to go just get care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see us do something better here.
Well, what along those same lines, yeah. what can the Idaho legislature do in that situation? Seems like it might be kind of a free market type deal.
Yes and no. We certainly could work on setting up, you know, whether it's a part-time clinic up here for OBGYNs. I contacted KMC about that, their CEO actually. He said, if we can get some staffing, mm-hmm. he said, we'd be all in. But he said, can you help us get some staffing? He said, how, you know, it's hard enough to get nurses now. When I asked, well, how many nurses do we need to have trained? He said, why don't we start by doubling our nursing training programs mm-hmm. To where we could actually get people faster than they're retiring or leaving the industry. Also said, you know, you could go a ways as far as women's health care by clearing up some of our abortion statutes and make sure that it's very clear for our healthcare professionals what is and is not part of our abortion statutes. So I ran a bill last year and try to run a bill this year for clarification, not expansion, mm-hmm. clarification, and use court language, which is pretty common, to take a judge's opinion and put it in the statute to make sure that's clear for our doctors. That was the number one issue why doctors, 30% of our OBGYNs have left our practice. So that's the number one
because they
issue.
Were afraid that the way the statute's currently written, that if they provide a certain type of care, it might be considered criminal.
Right, right. And what I did is just a clarification. Doesn't change the criminalization, doesn't change the penalties. It just adds the clarity. And the judge, it's already out there. And, you know, some people say, well, there it is. Well, if it's in statute, it doesn't take court proceedings to get to that. So that's the hope. And so anyway, you eat that elephant one bite at a time, whether it's a part-time clinic or it's some clarification in statute or it's helping the, you know, making sure that we're training as many people as we can to fill openings that are predictable, that we need to have filled. All of those things add up to getting better health care for our district.
Mm-hmm. And I presume you're working with Bonner General and up in Boundary County as well?
Boundary, yeah. We're starting to reach out to everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what happened to the bill that you were proposing to clarify?
The clarification bill, the chairman in the building in the Capitol all decided that they did not want to hear any bills that had to do with abortion this year because there's an initiative out there. And they felt that it should run its course and we'll see what happens with it if it makes the ballot and then see what the vote is. Personally, I don't agree with that. And I let all of them know it diplomatically. That I don't agree with sitting and waiting for a year or two and not having the health care that I think our voters and citizens should have, that we should just wait for another year or two on that. I think we ought to take some action, and that's why I wrote the bill to get that clarification done. Had a lot of support. There's a Catholic doctors group. There's a Mormon women's group that support it. The doctors that I spoke with all support trying to do something. Mm-hmm. And those are just words. It doesn't need hundreds of thousands of dollars of efforts. It's let's clean this up mm-hmm. and get that clarification.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So prospects for it next year, since this initiative is kind of pending, are probably not that good, will that initiative be decided this?
I think it could get to the November ballot.
Okay.
And if that's so, then when we come back in, we'd be able to deal with it.
Yeah, and I believe the organizers are trying to get it on the November ballot.
Right. So, and I've stayed out of that initiative battle, but I just think, you know, we as a legislature should be doing something, and that's leadership mm-hmm. versus staying and waiting.
Okay, healthcare is a big issue for you. What other issues you think voters might be weighing out as they consider who to vote for in this election?
Well, I ran a bill successfully on property insurance, and property insurance and people getting non-renewals and canceled for their policies is an issue. We extended the time that they get to react to it, to a letter of non-renewal, from 30 days to 60 days. That actually took a bill. We had to run that all the way through, you know, both sides of the Capitol and get the gov to sign it. Had that done, and I think the next step is, you know, what to do with our property insurance and how much information we can get to, so we can make decisions on, you know, clearance of areas or,
Clearance. This is specifically in our area, this relates to fire hazards.
Absolutely. access to buildings, clearance from, you know, overhead trees, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of roof you have, you know, all of those things are important. But insurance companies are starting to use different, you know, apps and Google Maps to look at properties. It would be helpful if they would share that information. Other states have done it. Utah's done this. Mm-hmm. They've even adopted some standards for clearance. There's a international or a standards that they've said, you know, if we did this, the insurance company said, well, we could see there'd be benefits for us. We would reduce the risk that we would have and the exposure to major problems. So how to get there is to get our insurance companies on board and move that way. So that's another dialogue that I've already started. But it's going to take some work to get that to happen. And the quality of your fire department makes a difference. Insurance companies rate that too. Mm-hmm. In Idaho, we have an independent group, the Idaho Survey and Rating Bureau, and they rate fire departments. And if your fire department gets a 10, you're likely going to pay more in your insurance policy than if it gets a 4 or a 6. Mm-hmm. So, but what we don't know yet is how important that is to some of the different insurance companies, and then if there's any other discounts out there for better, you know, better roof. So we're trying to kind of pull back that. We're not asking for the recipe on how an insurance company does it. We believe that that's proprietary, but knowing what the ingredients are would help. Being able to know, you know, hey, this is what you have to have for us to keep insuring you or to get you a little better rate.
Have you been hearing from constituents that they are losing or having their insurance rates really pop up?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Last summer, I had a number of calls. I've talked to a number of people over the years because I remember I worked for the Selkirk Fire District for a while and helped people get their insurance. And when I've called back on some of my old contacts, they've said, we continue to have a battle with that. Mm-hmm. So that's why we did the extension, and that's why we're working on the insurance transparency issue. It's not to hurt the insurance industry, actually, it's to help them. I mean, it's in everyone's best interest to prevent these big catastrophic fires. So that's why I just keep after that.
Okay, other issues that you might want to bring up?
Those really are pretty big issues. Between property insurance is a lot like property tax. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to pay it. Mm-hmm. Very few people can go without property insurance.
Yeah, if you have a mortgage in your home, you're going to have insurance.
And now for many, that property insurance bill is approaching, you know, in some cases have passed their property tax bill. Mm-hmm. And when that starts happening, I mean, that's doubled. Mm-hmm. So if we can whittle down that property insurance issue, that's a big thing. The other thing is you asked about the letters of non-renewal. I think up until just, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, non-renewal letters went out to about 1% of the people or policyholders. Right now in our area, there's areas, the zip codes in Sagal, and there's some other areas in our county that between 5 and 15% of the policyholders are getting it. So that's a big thing. And if you're a longtime policyholder, and you've got your car wrapped and bundled into all of these things, all of a sudden getting a letter of non-renewal, that's a big deal that you've got to work your way through. So we're trying to figure out how to make that better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you could say it's also one argument for supporting your fire district too. Yeah.
Yep. Yes, it is. So, but we'd like to be able to nail that down and let people know, and then look at that business decision, and then let people make those decisions based on facts. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, let's go through some of the things that the House and the whole legislature considered this year. And probably the biggest one was what to do about our state budget, because there's been some shortfalls, or at least projected shortfalls in the state budget. And of course, Idaho Constitution requires the state to balance its budget each year. So this year, the legislature and Governor Brad Little enacted a series of bills for budget cuts that reduce funding for most state agencies and departments by 4% this year and 5% beginning in fiscal year 2027, which actually starts in July 1st. We can't comment on all these various series of bills that were addressing this. I guess philosophically, do you feel like the legislature took the right tack in basically making a kind of a 4%, 5% across the board cut in departments?
Well, we got it done. So if the end is what we're after, then I guess that's okay. Personally, I would have liked to see them really get into a little more detail. I think some of the departments and divisions across the state probably could have used a little shorter haircut. And I think some of them probably didn't need that same cut. Some of the different agencies were spared corrections, because we don't have much choice, because if there's more inmates, there's the costs go up. The governor carved out a little bit of a safe area for education. And then ISP had some carve outs as well. But there are some, mandatory parts of our health and welfare budgets that we need to follow too. So I would have liked to see him look at it more like attack it with a scalpel rather than a chainsaw. But we made it, we got it done. I think it's good for our residents that we adopted the conformity bill, and that
was House Bill 559, yeah. Which basically it's conforming Idaho to the federal tax changes that were in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that President Trump signed last year.
Right. I think that there's a lot of parts of that I think that are helpful. There's certainly an affordability part. It changes the tax on overtime, changes the tax on tips. It helps out our seniors. It even allows for some to write off their auto loans. So those are all, pocketbook, kitchen table types things that are all good. But part of it also meant we had to really cut a lot of our state programs to make that. And that's some of the issues that I had, which was, what do we do with our behavioral health? We ended up cutting about $20 million out of our behavioral health system. And our sheriffs came out and said, that's probably going to cost our counties and our local communities $100 million mm-hmm. by the time we treat more patients, potentially jail them, house them, care for them. The ACT program and a peer-to-peer program, they keep people out of jail and they keep better care of them. Mm-hmm. So that was harmful. So
And I believe our Sheriff Wheeler...
Yeah, he opposed that.
He opposed that, yes.
Oh, yeah. And I talked to him, so mm-hmm. yes. So he opposed that. So, and anyway, so that's... and also, we adopted the Big Beautiful Bill, so it goes backwards to 2025.
Retroactive, yes.
Retroactive, which is really hard because we'd already had our budget set, so we did all these big cuts to make some of that work. But that overtime exemption and the tip exemption, I think we had 4 years to use those exemptions, and to lose one of those years would have hurt our residents. So it was a tough decision to make.
And so in the end, were you in favor, opposed to 559?
I was supportive of adopting it. I think we cut too much out of some of our local services. But ultimately we replaced some of those, and you don't know that when you're voting on it, mm-hmm. but we replaced some of that funding later in the session. So I consider myself, I agreed to the conformity, I just didn't agree with the day we voted on the chainsaw approach.
And I'm sure that's true with a lot of legislation, that there's parts of it you support, parts you don't support, and you have to make a decision go in on it or not. Well, along those veins, let's talk about some other bills. So House Bill 913 called for the state to implement work requirements for adults enrolled in Medicaid expansion in order to receive those benefits. How did you come down on that one?
I voted for it. I think the people in our area expect, you know, people to you know, get their benefits and earn their benefits. Mm. And if we're going to help people that can work, then I think they need to show those that they're going to be working. Mm. So I think we would expect that from people. And so I thought our district would want that. So.
Okay.
Holds people accountable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. House Bill 561. This one was kind of particular to Bonner's Ferry because it calls for a $2,000 a day fine for government entities that fly unapproved flags. And in Bonner's Ferry, they have had a long tradition of flying a Canadian flag, and they've actually kind of been doing it in violation of the rule that passed a year ago. So it was amended to allow Bonner's Ferry to fly their flag by saying that local governments could fly flags of other countries that have historic relations, which we do with Canada up here. But it required Boise to stop flying their LGBTQ pride flag. So again, there's always these things with this legislation that you might approve a part of it, but disapprove of another part of it. Mm-hmm. How did you come down on House Bill 561?
Well, House Bill 561 started in the House. The gentleman that ran that bill was down the hall from me in my office area. I could not get him to carve out that, you know, favored nation
for
Bonner's Ferry. So I voted against it. Mm-hmm. I voted against the same bill last year. I just didn't think it was right to criminalize the people and the good people in Bonner's Ferry for doing something they've done for 50 years, mm-hmm. especially when Canadians go there and contribute a significant amount to their economy. Mm-hmm. So I voted against it on the House side. It went over to the Senate side, was amended. Mm-hmm. They did carve out that part for the Canadian flag in Bonner's Ferry. But as that process requires that bill then to come back to the House for another vote, for an approval. And I did vote for it then. Because once they'd carved that out, I said, okay, I think the people in our district would say, yes, that they've settled this issue that we have in our area. I'm not sure how we would weigh in on the vote for Boise, but I'm the representative for our district. And I think that was important.
So the kind of the bigger philosophical issue here is how much local control should communities have about decisions like that.
Yeah. And I've tried my best to always, you know, respect and support our local control. And when they carved that out and I figured, okay, we got our local control back, then I could vote for that.
Okay, we are going to run out of time in just a couple minutes. Let's try to squeeze a couple more in here. So House Bill 752 makes it a crime for people who knowingly and willfully enter a bathroom, locker room, shower room, or changing room designed for the opposite biological sex. Of course, that was an issue here with an individual that was using YMCA. Kind of, I don't know if that kicked off this whole bill, but how did you come down on House Bill 752?
I voted for it. I mean, there's ample options in the bill. I don't know how it will get enforced. And that's part of the bill. And like you pointed out, there's good parts, you know, there's parts in a bill that you go, yeah, that all makes good sense. And then there's other parts, it's a tipping point. Is there too much ambiguity in it? Or is there an enforcement issue? It was an issue here in our community. You're absolutely right. I talked to our police department. I talked to people that, you know, the YMCA groups, the swim group. And I thought that, okay, I think people here would believe, and I don't think a man belongs in a locker room with my wife or my daughter. So I thought, okay, I think the people here would want, you know, some separation there. And so I went along with it. I'm not sure how the enforcement of it will all go, but I think as a statement and the sign, you know, signage on the doors and all that, I think is reasonable. So I went along with that.
Okay, we're going to ask one more here. House Bill 583 is another one that kind of had local implications here. It restricts local government's ability to impose rules that single out short-term rentals for additional requirements. Basically, Sandpoint dealt with that because of the threatened potential lawsuits that their restriction on the number of short-term rentals in the city, you know, they had to actually get rid of that. Mm-hmm. So, and this actually basically supported the distinction that should not be allowed for local communities to put that kind of restriction on okay. short-term rentals. How did you come down on that bill?
I voted against it. I even debated against it. I looked into it. To me, Sandpoint was the example of how local control works. They didn't have an ordinance. Then they did it. They did have an ordinance. They decided they needed to change it. I think had 583 not been passed, I think it's been passed. I think Sandpoint could have gone back in and said, hey, what's a better option for us in our community? And I think that's where the decision should be made. It should be made here at the local level. If they don't want to have any ordinance, so be it. But if they do have a local interest, then I think they're in the best place to make that decision. So I honored the local control on that and said, that's how it should be. I don't think that a one-size-fits-all effort, and I don't think that Boise should be the place that should be making our rules for Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry and other areas in our district.
Okay, well, we are officially out of time. Mark Sauter, our House Seat A District 1 legislature representative. How do people find out more about you if they want to check you out before they vote?
I have a website, marksauterforidaho.org. You can go online and look at that. I'll have a few mailers I'll be sending out. There are already some candidate forms that are planned. I know there'll be a questionnaire in the newspapers that will be carried. So there should be ample information. You can call me. My phone number is on the website, and you can, if there's an issue, or people can text me if they want.
That's Mark Sauter for Idaho.org.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's ample ways to do it. And I talk about one thing? Can
okay.
You still fit in?
Yep.
Real fast. You know, there's another part of running bills that needs to be shared, and that's the frustration sometimes. When last summer I went to Bonner's Ferry and talked to a traffic committee, and we've ultimately found that we have some bad drivers in our area, and it was all about Highway 95. I ran a bill that would repeal the state's action because we quit suspending driver's licenses for unpaid traffic fines. There's over $23 million of unpaid traffic fines in our state. But I ultimately did not get it through the Senate side because it potentially would take away people's freedoms. I really want to go back and work on that again, leaving $23 million of unpaid traffic fines and also allowing people to not have consequences for breaking the law. Just doesn't seem right to me. So I'd love to get reelected and go back and get another bite out of that apple. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mark Sauter, for taking time to talk with us.